Good evening. Welcome each one to our service here tonight. It's good to be here. We've been having a lot of fun. I don't know if fun is the right word. Thank you. But we have been learning about finances, money, and in a way it could maybe seem like not as spiritual as a topic as some, but I am trying to change that. I think we have a little bit of the wrong concept sometimes. But I've learned a few things. I've learned how to say covetousness. I was saying covetousness. So if you want to know how to say covetousness, that's the right way. And I also learned who Timmy is. On their papers, I told them to identify an expense that they could cut out. And someone wrote to quit stopping at Timmy's on the way to work. Now, is Timmy a homeless person or who is Timmy's? And I discovered it's Tim Hortons. So you Canadians have an interesting culture there, a little different than ours. And that's great. We're glad you're here. Thanks to our church as well for bringing in meals. We've been taught fed well, and we appreciate that very much. Just a little bit of a review from those who are from our church. Day one was whether we are a steward or an owner, and the way we look at that makes a very big difference on how we live. Day two was spending and budgeting. We analyzed the finances of a young married couple that was not doing very well, and we helped them out, and we got them out of their jam, and they're doing fine. They're now saving $500 a month. Day three, we talked about giving and the difference between tithing and cheerful giving. Tithing being a requirement, a dutiful giving, and cheerful giving as something coming out of the heart. So the lesson today, actually in my lineup, would have been some do's and don'ts in setting up a new business. And I thought that would maybe not be as appropriate on Sunday to talk about that. So we're going to go fast forward one lesson and talk about how our businesses can be a mission. This is something I am personally very passionate about. We established our business, the partnership I'm involved in, specifically to operate that way. And I can say we've been tested on that. And it was so wonderful. One morning I was on the way here and I was messaging my business partner and telling him that there were some customers we need to get back to and asking him if he could take care of it. And he just made the comment, if we lose a sale because of the Lord's work, that's fine. And so that's the motto that I would like to have in my business, where it's more than money, it's more than the dollar. And that's what we want to talk about today, tonight. And the title is Business as Mission. If I would have a subtitle, I would call it The Forgotten Mission Field. And hopefully that will make sense a little later. So this past week, I got a call, and I was talking with this person, and they asked me, they said, what does finances have to do with Bible school? And the more I thought about that, the more I realized that that is everything that we have wrong with our concept of finances. What does it have to do with Bible school? Think about that. There was an Amish landlord in Pennsylvania, and he had a struggling tenant in one of his rental properties, and he was challenged on why he was being hard on this struggling woman. And his response was that there is a time for church and there is a time for business, and this is a time for business. Think about that. My goal tonight is to teach us a better way than that. Can you imagine if Jesus was here? So you're not going to find a lot of scripture verses that talk about our businesses. You're just not. I couldn't go to the scripture and just really pull out scriptures that talk about our businesses and how to structure our businesses. And I think there's a reason for that, because Jesus would have just expected that our businesses is just simply a part of our Christian life. It's just an extension of who we are as kingdom Christians. I was at a business seminar, true story. I went as a radical young person, probably about y'all's age, and they had a panel discussion. I submitted a question, and that was, should we not present the gospel or share the gospel with every customer that we come in contact with? And so they didn't know I had put it in. The question was read off, and I was shocked at the response. There was a bishop in the crowd, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember he said something to the effect of, what does the gospel have to do with our businesses? And he didn't understand why this question was even relevant. And I just remember, as a young person, I was shocked. I knew that was not the correct answer. So I would like to ask you tonight, and I know that you all are not, probably, do not have your own businesses. Some of you maybe do, but most likely you work for someone. So how is this relevant to you? I want you to do better than we've done. I want my children to do better in business than me. And I want you to establish that you are going to have, if you ever have your own business, you're going to have a kingdom-focused business that is a lot more than how much money you can make. As that's been my goal for the Bible school class, what does some of this stuff have to do with the young ladies? And I think it has everything to do with it, because they're going to be here in a couple of years, probably advising their husbands. And so this tonight hopefully is in preparation for you. And if someone is here tonight and has a business, then this by all means applies to you. But I just like to ask you, those of you that have businesses, why are you in business? If I asked you that question tonight, what would your response be? And I think that your response would tell everything about your business. Because if your response is that it is to provide for my family and to send money to missions, that's probably how you're operating your business. If you told me that your business is a kingdom-focused business that is intentional with using your business as a tool of outreach, I would also know what kind of business you operate. I believe one of the greatest opportunities that we are missing is in our work and in our business. And I don't know where this changed, but it's because I can assure you that the early Anabaptists did not live that way. They lived a very consistent life. And somewhere along the line, and I'm not here to complain about our culture, I do think there's times where we need to sit back and analyze things and maybe say we haven't done so well. And so I am just simply here tonight saying, I don't think we have done so well on this topic. And I think, well, we'll get into that. So why do we even have business? Why business as business? We often compartmentalize. We have church, we have ministry, we have business, and they all have their different categories and compartments, and depending on the situation, we'll pull from one and the other. We've historically, I believe, separated our businesses and missions, and probably without even thinking about it. What if our business was our mission? Imagine that. Another term I've heard is business as witness. Our business, I believe, should be a vehicle by which people hear the gospel and see it. There is tremendous witness in how we do our work and interact with our customers. It's very important to think about crafting a vision and mission statement for your business. We'll get into that tomorrow. Think about what you want your business to be known for. When someone hears Esh whatever, what comes to their mind? What's the first thing that comes to their mind? We know this thing of having a good reputation as far as us personally, but what about our business? What reputation does your business have in the community? Do you want to be known for paying your employees well? Or do you want to be known for that person who pays them as little as possible? You are probably known for one or the other. We are usually either known for paying them well or not paying them enough. We're often known for that. Another tremendous opportunity in business is relationships. There are so many relationships in business, and I'm here to tell you, I don't care if you are in a truck, if you are putting siding on. I have discovered, no matter where I am in business, I used to be in a store and had tremendous opportunity as far as the amount of people, and now I get out sometimes and deliver a shed or deliver a pavilion or whatever, and I discover that no matter what I do, there's opportunities out there. I'd like for you to turn to 1 Peter 2, verse 9. This is where we're going to start. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. We're going to be reading through verse 12. All right, 1 Peter 2, 9. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. All right, first thing there. Called out of darkness into light. Should be a difference. Which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles or the community people, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. All right, so in verse 11, strangers and pilgrims. So you get the idea that we're weird. We're a little different. And sometimes we really feel it. I'm sure you ladies really feel it when you go to town. And I wonder, do our businesses also look weird? Or do our businesses look like the normal businesses? Jesus talked about, he said, the children of this world are, in the KJV it says, wiser than the children of light. That wiser there is actually shrewd. They are more shrewd than the children of light. Are our businesses shrewd? Are our business dealings shrewd? Or are we different? Are we a different kind of business? And can they, by our business dealings, show through our good works that they can behold and glorify God in the visitation? You know, that's such a cliche thing for us to say, that we want to honor and glorify God in all we do. But do we really? Do our businesses and our work, do we really glorify God? I'd like to talk a little bit about employees. If you have employees, you have a tremendous opportunity to build relationships. One thing we started doing at the store soon before we sold, and I wish we would have done it a long time before, and that was simply start the day with a word of prayer. Very appropriate thing for you to do with your employees before you even start working, to say, hey, let's just all gather around and let's pray. Pray for opportunities. Give your employees a purpose more than making you wealthy. And I'll just tell you how I used to do that, and I wish I had the opportunities that I had at one time, but I would tell our employees that I want them to give customers things. I want them to give a free cup of coffee. I want them to give we had these little chocolates right before you get to the checkout. They were probably 30, 40 cents a piece. I very much stressed to them, and of course we also tried to have our business as a mission. And there is something that happens when a business is generous with his customers. There is something that happens. You develop a loyalty base among your customers that you won't believe. Very small acts of kindness like that. And for us, it was a lot of people coming in and out of those doors. So if we would have given everybody a $20 bill, we wouldn't have lasted very long. So if maybe it's a bigger sale, maybe it's a $10,000 pavilion. So there's more things we can do there. One thing we try to do for our customers, we have a little goodie bag. We have a jar of jam, a coffee mug, sticker. There's this little goodie bag we like to give to our customers when the job is completed. And if you want to get some really good five-star reviews, that's a really good way to do it. And I'm not saying that's why we do it, but it really, really makes a difference. Because everybody out there is, it feels like, is just out there to get everything they can from you. And when there is a business that's willing to give back when they don't have to, it's very powerful. So we really tried to establish that at our workplace. And you have to have a ministry environment to where your employees feel free to talk. I actually asked different people on this topic to give me things, and someone gave me something that was so good. Make sure you tell your employees that they are allowed to talk to customers. If your employees feel that they can't talk to customers because they're on the clock, if that's the kind of employer, then I think that's a little bit sad. As an employer, we should tell our employees to not ever hesitate to talk to a customer. Now, that can always be taken too far. I think we understand that, but they should have that freedom. Train them. Another thing I got, train your customers how to talk to people and show them how it's done. You train them how to be cashiers. You train them how to put metal on. You train them all kinds of these things. Have you trained them how to do ministry work to your customers? We had an older lady. She was a cashier. Just had a heart of gold. She would pray with people. If you can get some employees, I'll just say this, if you can get some employees on board with your ministry and your business, you have a powerful force. If you're going to try to convince, if you have some employees that don't have your vision and you're going to try to get that across, it's probably not going to work very well. So your employees need to have that vision with you. And then we have our customers. The forgotten mission field. Here's where the categorization takes place. It is very easy to think of a customer as simply a monetary transaction. It is just a transaction that takes place. Why do we try to get the last dollar out of our customers, and then when the offering plate comes around, we drop the profits of that in the offering plate? Why do we do that? There's something that's confused me for a long time. I personally don't think that someone should go on the mission field if they are not sharing the gospel with the people they are around. And what we do when we don't do that is we have the mission field, we have home, we do work here, we do mission work there. When we come back, we stop. And there are people, and I think I'm going to use Mark Yoder as an example here tonight. I'll flatter you a little bit, Mark. Mark just sold their business, but he did very well with ministering in their community. And Mark had a store, and he ministered to their community there through business. And then he went to Mountain View and continued ministering there. And when he came back, he continued ministering. Do you see the difference of someone who is just work, 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 and all of a sudden I get a call from AMA and I go over and I'm now a pastor for a couple of years, and then I come back and it's just work, work, work. It does not make sense to me. Ministry should be a continual part of our life. We should do ministry here, and if we're asked to go on the mission field, wonderful. It's just an extension of what you are already doing here. Here in America, we hurry, we scurry. Our neighbors see us flying along the roads, back and forth to church. I'll give you a story about that a little later. I got really good feedback. I asked someone who I know is very intentional with his business to give me some ideas or pointers. And here's what he said. There was an older lady. He does construction work. There was an older lady who had very little money. The fascia board was rotted out. It was not a pleasant job. She had gotten a quote for $4,500 to do the work. It's a true story. He asked her what she can afford. She said she could afford around $1,000. And so he did the work for around $1,000. And he could have easily charged $3,000 for that job. That is a way where your job can be a ministry. And another job he had was a disabled customer who was living paycheck to paycheck. He did not want the job. He didn't want to do it. He ended up breaking even on that job. He did it anyway. And he said it felt like he was working for Christian Aid. Now think about that. We can go and muck out houses for Christian Aid, but our community people around here, we will throw large bids so that we don't have to help them. We don't have to do the work. And I'm not sure if I have this in here later or not. Something that is so important. We have to slow down. There is no way that we are going to be effective Kingdom Christians at the busy rate that we normally go. We fill our week so full. And another suggestion that came in that I 100% agree with, leave one day out a week. Don't fill your week so full. Don't wait for Saturday for all your catch-up work. Don't fill up the full 5 days with jobs. Leave a day in there. And I have been amazed. If I only have, say, 3 days scheduled, my whole week fills up. Somehow, things come up. And if we fill our days so full, what are you going to do with opportunities? We're probably not going to take them. And I have found to not schedule as much work, especially with deliveries and things. We want to get so much done in a day, but if I just take a day and I don't plan so full, I'm much more apt to take the opportunities. So we've got to slow down, and we have to schedule less in our week for this to work. Our attitudes towards our community. We like to be appreciated. We like to be known for our good food. We're used to being said well of, and I think that's good. Are our customers getting what they pay for? We like when people say that they want us to do it because we do good work and we're on time and we're all these, and those things are absolutely good and we need to do that. But someone told me that our work quality is going downhill. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but his observation was that our work quality is not quite what it used to be. We want to get the job done, we want to get out of there, and we want to get paid. That's the rhythm. And I just think, I don't think that this is necessarily like a real bad problem, but I think it's something we need to be on guard for, that we retain our integrity through that, that customers get what they pay for. Another suggestion I got in was we can use our business equipment to help when there is community disaster. So our community people know we have equipment and money and all these things, and if flooding or tornado or whatever comes through, are we quick to take our business equipment and help? I thought that was a good suggestion. I've been telling the students that sometimes we use this thing of stewardship as a tool for selfishness. We say, well, we're in town, and someone needs $10. And we're like, well, I can't give this guy $10 because he's probably going to go buy cigarettes. So I am a good steward, and I don't give him the money. And I go to Starbucks, and I buy a $10 macchiato, and I am a good steward. Does that at all sound familiar? We can do the same thing in our business. We sure don't want to get the short end of the stick. So in good stewardship, we fight to make sure that we come out on top. And I just really, really caution against that we don't use this thing of stewardship as a tool for our own selfish gain. If we really are a good steward, Jesus said to give our stuff. If you want to be a good steward, do that. Another way to help in our community is our businesses supporting local fundraisers. We really like when people come to our fundraisers for our schools and our hospital bills or whatever. What about our community fundraisers? And I know there's sports and things like that we don't get into, but there are times when there's hospital bills of local people where we could help. Getting back to people when you promise you will. I have found this actually to be very challenging, and it takes a lot of work to do this. I need to do a lot better with this. When we tell someone we're going to be there, we be there. Just doing that will make you a pilgrim and stranger anymore. It's shocking how often people just don't get back to you, or don't seem like they care. Be easy to get along with. It just bothers me when I hear this thing of someone is no longer able to work with an Anabaptist because they're so hard to get along with. That should not be the case. I have a relative who does construction. He builds homes. And he said his worst customers have been Mennonites, people who claim to be Anabaptists. He had one customer that wanted everything he could possibly get for the cheapest price. And sometimes we're too much that way. We want everything we can get for as cheap as possible. We expect the most goods and services for as little as possible. Let us be workable. What is our testimony in the community? Are we known for being a workable person? And this thing of compartmentalizing, what we do on Sunday, we flip the switch, the toggle. If I had a toggle up here, I would use that. And on Monday morning, we toggle it back off, back into business mode. We're unworkable. We're demanding. We yell at our whoever is working for us. It is inconsistent with our testimony. There are unexpected opportunities that come up in our business. I, here recently, had an interesting thing happen to me. We were building a pavilion in Lebanon, Tennessee, east of Nashville, and the crew was out there. We ordered the wrong metal. So I needed metal now. I called Watson Metal in Dixon, and they could get me in at 3 o'clock. Wasn't soon enough. I called Quality Building Supply in Lobelville, and they said, hey, be here by, I think it was 10 o'clock. We'll get it ready for you. So I showed up a little after 10, and I went inside. I got my work order invoice, and I went over to the trim area, or the metal area there. I picked up my trim. And it's a bad sign when more employees start coming out and everybody's walking along the rows of metal looking for your metal and they can't find it. That's a bad sign. So they said, well, we don't have your metal ready. Give us 30 minutes. And I was in a hurry. But they were gracious to get it to me. I wasn't upset or anything. I went inside. I was like, well, I'll go into the lobby. See if there's something to do in there. And I walk in there. And for those of you that aren't from around here, Quality Building Supply is in Lobelville, which is in the sticks. It is back in. And I walk in there, and I see a Middle Eastern Muslim couple sitting there. And I was like, what in the world? So I went over, I couldn't help myself, asked them where they're from. And they were from 2 hours away. They drove there to look at a house, getting a house, package. And they said, well, you want to know where we're originally from? I said, yes. They said, we're from Iraq. So here I was in the sticks of Lobelville with an Iraqi Muslim couple talking about Jesus. There's a couple of things there. First of all, delays can turn into opportunities. And the other thing is, if I would have seen the couple and my medal would have been ready, I don't know if I would have stopped. So that's another thing on time. And the question that I have for all of us, and this has nothing to do with Quality Building Supply, it's just where it happened. If that would have been your business, would have that Iraqi Muslim couple who does not believe in Jesus like you and I, would have they somehow through the buying process seen Jesus, or would have they been another transaction in your profit and loss statement at the end of the month? That is a question I want us to consider. Are customers only transactions, or are they opportunities? We should be in the business of reconciliation as well. Providing shelter for someone is helping mankind. There are businesses that I could not be a part of simply because it does not align with our values. We had a realtor. Had a realtor contact me. By the way, this was not Josiah. Make that very clear. Had a realtor contact me, said, hey, there's this property here. Would you be interested in it? I was like, well, you could go look at it, possibly. And so we went and looked at it. We were walking through the house. It was a very beautiful piece of land. It had a creek in the back. Very nice. But there was a mobile home on it that did not look good at all. And we walked through this house, and the grandma, the mom, and the son were on the porch. And we walked through the house. There was one problem with this property, and that was that the tenants were not paying rent and had not paid rent for some time. And so buying this property would have came with kicking out these people. And I was in the house, and I saw this boy's room, and I saw their livelihood. I saw that. And you know what the realtor told me? This is normal business practices out there, okay? It's nothing against her. It's just normal business practices out there that I can't be a part of. She said, I will get him out. I'll evict him. So now we had a conflict of ethics. So, do you buy a piece of property? Is there any amount of money that would justify that? And I know there's probably ways of doing that that I don't know of that would maybe be okay. But I just personally decide I'm not going to do that. I am not going to put them out on the street. And there's things like that that we run into that we could possibly, money-wise, would make perfect sense, but ethics would come in the way. So to you young guys here, what does this have to do with me? What am I going to do with this? Recently in our Sunday school, we had So we're going through the character study of David. And it just made such an impression on me that here David, I think it says he was a stripling out in the field. He was the least important employee. He was the least important one. He was out there in the fields tending to the sheep. What in the world was he good for? And he came out and he said, when the giant was taunting God's people, is there not a cause? He did not have a leadership position. And I'm going to give you this as an encouragement. I'm not sure if I should say assignment. But if you work for someone who does not have this as their vision, just ask them, is there not a cause? That is something you could do. Maybe you could inspire the rest of your employees. Maybe you could inspire your employer. Maybe he would love to do it and just doesn't know how. Maybe his dad operated a business like this, and so he's operating like this. Maybe he doesn't know how, and he would love to have some ideas. Is there not a cause? Is there not more to life than this? Can we not do better than this? In closing, I would like, I would like to read you a story that I wrote that is not necessarily a true story, although there's a lot of truth in it. And I am not picking on roofers, I promise. It just worked well in my story. And I didn't know whose last name to use, so I am part Wengard. So I'm going to be referring to this person as Wengard. And I'm just going to see if you can identify with this story. And then maybe tomorrow in class, we can have a discussion on that. So imagine a neighbor here in our community. They hardly ever hear from their Mennonite neighbors up the road. The only time they see them is when they are speeding on the way to church. They must be running late again, they assume. They just received a call from the Mennonites wondering if they can come sing some Christmas songs. Sure, why not? We don't have anything else going tonight. A group of friendly Mennonites show up on a Sunday evening with a nice platter of cookies and are there to sing Christmas carols. The Mennonites are invited inside their home, and this older couple is mesmerized by the melodious singing. Afterwards, they begin asking this couple about their children, their life. They seem genuinely interested in what is going on in their life of this community couple. A few weeks later, they realize they have a leak in the roof. Remembering one of the Mennonites that evening had said he does roofing, she began inquiring about a phone number. This couple reaches Quality Roofing, and Mr. Wengard says he'll be out to give an estimate. Expecting the same Mennonite she had met just a few weeks ago, she was surprised to find him fidgeting and hardly able to hold a conversation. He seemed in a huge hurry. I have more jobs to look at, he says, as he pulls out his phone. He hurries off and says he'll get him an estimate. The estimate comes back at a reasonable price. They show up at the job and run around trying to get everything done that day. They don't even take time for a lunch break. We have to keep moving so we can get done before it gets dark, he says. I have another job scheduled for tomorrow. We are so busy right now, he tells the customer. At dusk, the crew is tired and ready to go home. They jump into the vehicle, and Mr. Wengard hurries up to the door to collect the check so he can get back to his family. It had been a good week for Quality Roofing. Mr. Wengard sat in church the next Sunday, satisfied about his week. The congregation sang, "Bringing in the Sheaves," as they passed the monthly mission offering. He confidently placed his check into the offering basket. I'm sure glad God has blessed me with a lot of work so I can give to the needy.